Did Paul teach that strong Christians don't have to worry about going to church on Sunday? We ended at verse 4 last week. We're picking up at verse 5 of Romans 14. One person esteems one day as better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats, eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God, while the one who abstains, abstains in honor of the Lord and gives thanks to God. For none of us lives to himself and none of us dies to himself. There's one of the most misunderstood verses in the New Testament. We won't get to it this week or next. But that idea that most people see in that is, well, what Paul's saying is, you know, like no man is an island. What you do affects everybody. And that's not what Paul is saying in that verse. That's not what that verse is about. And when you look at the context, you can see that it's not what it's about. When he says no one lives to himself and no one dies to himself, he means everything we do in relationship to the Lord. If we live, verse 8, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or whether we die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living. The verses tonight are basically 5 and 6. What are we going to make of these words? What are we going to do with verse 5? One person esteems one day better than another, while another esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. What do those words mean? Do those verses teach that only weak Christians have this devoted attachment to honor the Lord's day? Do those verses teach that all the days are the same, they're all God's days, he created them, and that each person should be fully persuaded in his own mind? Each person can make up his own mind how and when he will set time apart for the Lord. Is that what Paul's saying? How important is Sunday? Is there any abiding scriptural meaning to the concept of the first day of the week as being important, set aside as the church's day of corporate worship? Is it still the Lord's day? If it is so, how is it so? And eventually we're going to get through all of that. I want to look quickly, though, in the first 2 points at the concept of the Old Testament Sabbath, because I think I'm arguing that even that goes far beyond the idea that the average Christian carries around from the fourth commandment, just remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, and what we think is, well, don't work. I remember it was a few years ago, I was speaking on this subject. And when I was done, a pretty prominent leader in the Christian community who just happened to be in that service, he came up to me and he shook my hand, thanked me, and then said, so which is your Sabbath? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, it can't be Sunday because you work on Sunday. What's your Sabbath? And I was taken back a bit. And finally it dawned on me. I thought, oh, I get it. I get it. He's still working with the concept that the Old Testament Sabbath, to which the New Testament Sunday is a replacement, the Old Testament Sabbath is just this day where you don't do any work, a day of rest. And he thinks that that's what the Old Testament Sabbath is all about. And what I want to say tonight is that never, not only is it not what the Lord's Day is about, it never was what the Old Testament Sabbath was about. That's where we're going in tonight's teaching. Point number one. The foundational significance of the Sabbath was the setting forth of a visible witness that there was one true God who was the creator of all things. That's a typical Horban point. I guess it should be about half that length. Here are the texts. Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11, says this. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it, you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, or your male servant, or your female servant, or your livestock, or the sojourner who is within your gates. For, or here's the reason, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Fair enough. So far, so good. I think we all understand that concept. Exodus 31, 12 and 13. And the Lord said to Moses, "You are to speak to the people of Israel today and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths." Notice, above all. What is that? Above all, you shall keep my... I have instructions about homosexuality. But above all, this is issue number one. I have instructions about murder and adultery. But above all, this is what you tell the people. Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths. Why? Okay, we already have reason number one. It has to do with the rhythm of creation and God as creator. Now there's something else said. See, if you only have one text, then it's easy. But if you have several texts, then you have to put them all together to get a complete picture of the Old Testament teaching on the Sabbath. Above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. Okay, now you got something else. This process of being sanctified, set apart, drawn to God. So, here's where the whole subject starts in the Old Testament. God creates in 6 days and he rests on the seventh. Now, God doesn't rest, of course, in order to worship, for the obvious reason that God, being God, is the one creature in the whole universe. God alone has absolutely no one to worship. Only God. There's no one above him. There's no one higher. There's no one greater. So our rest isn't exactly like his. But just as God said to Moses, the creation of the world by the one true God receives permanent witness through the rhythm and completion of 6 days plus one. That's the first thing the Bible says about the Sabbath. Six plus one. And that is a testimony to God the Creator. Now, if you want proof of that, consider the fact, and it's fascinating, I had never done this, consider the fact that we still have weeks. That shouldn't be rushed over without thought. I mean, we have days because that's how long it takes the earth to revolve once on its axis. We have months because that's how long it takes the moon to orbit the earth in all of its phases. We have years because it takes a year for the earth to complete one orbit around the sun. Why do we have weeks? There's nothing specific in the realm of astronomy that coincides with weeks. In fact, you can go to Encyclopedia Britannica, not the Bible, just go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and it will cite the creation account in the opening chapters of Genesis as being the only valid reason for the presence of weeks in the way we calculate time. Six plus one, seven. We think in terms of weeks because God created the world in 6 days and he rested on the seventh. Now think about that. It means that every time this parking lot fills up and people get out of their cars and walk into this building, We are giving testimony to not the gods of the idols, but Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth. Every time some atheist says he's going to do something in 2 weeks, like it or not, he's pointing to the fact that God is the true creator of this world and everything in it. We're separating the God who created the world and all that is in it. We're separating him from all the clutter and all the idols that dominates the religions of the world. Weeks point to creation, and creation points to Yahweh, the creator of heaven and earth. But why this pause? There's still that question. Why did God, the text says, rest on the seventh day? Last summer, not this summer, but last summer, Renee and I on our holidays went to a church on a Sunday, and the pastor there was doing kind of an illustrated sermon, and it happened to be, of all things, on the subject of keeping the Sabbath. And the pastor came out dressed in keeping with his topic. He had casual cargo shorts, bare feet, sandals, I think a Toronto Blue Jays sports shirt. He had a baseball cap pointing backwards, like couldn't figure out where the visor goes. And he had a cup of coffee in his hand. And so he came out with this bag, and he was talking about keeping the Sabbath. And he was making the point that we're all stressed out. Life is hectic, life is busy. And he took little objects out of the bag he was holding, and so he would pull out a cell phone, and he would pull out a BlackBerry, and he would pull out a shopping list, and he would pull out a bundle of credit cards. The things that make our lives cluttered, the things that make our lives hectic, the things that bring stress and bondage. And to free us from all of this, God has given us this precious gift. He's given us this day to kick back, a day to catch fresh breath, a day to rest from all the mad material pursuits. And if we ignore this day, he cautioned, we're going to either burn out or get very frayed around the edges. And that was it. Kick back. Unwind. Take a break. You can't just sit and rev the engine too long without this pause. And I wouldn't argue that there's certainly some truth in that. But it's tragically incomplete in terms of what the Bible teaches, either about the Sabbath day in the Old Testament, it doesn't even touch that, or specifically the Lord's Day in the New Testament. See, the kind of rest we need isn't just a physical break. The kind of rest we need is a day that teaches, a day that trains, a day that doesn't just let us catch our breath, but reorients our lives for the rest of the week so that we can love the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, so that we can seek His kingdom first. That's not easy to do. We don't need a day that just gives us renewed energy so we can go back to the same lifestyle when it's over. For this is the sign, Exodus 13, this Sabbath day. This is a sign between me and you throughout your generations that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. We should know this. We should know that it's, in fact, what the Old Testament teaches. We should know it from the scriptures themselves. I mean, did God really rest on the seventh day? Did God just kind of fall back into a cloud and say, "Phew, am I bushed? I cannot make one more tree or I'm going to be fried." No, the text tells us that what God did, the text tells us he pondered his own works on the seventh day. In a way that would be highly egotistical for any of us to do so. Egotistical for any other being in the universe. God looked at his own sheer grace and power and goodness. And he said, do that. That's the pattern. You need a day where you stop doing the other things. But what do we do when we stop doing the other things? You need a day where you set your mind energetically to think about God's grace, his creative power, his sanctifying, delivering power. See, that's why the world is filled with weeks. There's this constant reminder to every person that one day is set apart for drawing near to God. So the Sabbath was never given just to give us a chance to chill and rest so we could return to our mad pursuit of self in the new week. The Sabbath was given to change the way we think altogether, every other day. Which is why, after those first three commandments, so important, all dealing with our relationship with God, you have this Sabbath where, and then God says, above all, tell them they must keep the Sabbath. Why? Because you can never honor God and keep from idols and love him. You can't do that without this full day of devotion to the Lord. How do you plan on doing it? The kind of rest we need is a day that teaches and trains us to live different lives. For obvious reasons, there are verses we quote far less often. The one we quote, the one that gets quoted is the day of rest. Because, well, I can sleep in. There are a lot of other verses on the Sabbath that rarely get read in our churches. One of the really interesting ones is Isaiah 58, 13 and 14. You have these instructions repeated about keeping the Sabbath. The prophet Isaiah comes to a people who don't. Isaiah 58 is all about people who are wondering what in the world has gone wrong in their relationship with God. Distant, far away, their lives are entrenched in idolatry. They're God's people, and they're as gummed up and bound in sin as anybody else on earth. And why doesn't God do something, and what in the world has gone wrong? That's what Isaiah 58 is all about. Then in 13 and 14, God speaks and says, if you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, you're doing it all wrong. Remember, above all, keep the Sabbath. Now, God speaks, and he says, you're not doing that. I told you to do this above all, but you're not. And when you don't, it has consequences. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day. Do you see the contrast? Your pleasure, my holy day. And call it a Sabbath, a delight. Because, see, ultimately, Jesus said the same thing. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The highest delight is in keeping the principle of what that day was all about, drawing close to the Lord, being sanctified, set apart unto him. That's where your delight is. If you'll turn it back from doing your pleasure and call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, not seeking your own pleasure. Boy, Pastor, I didn't know that was in the Bible. Not talking idly. Then you shall take delight in the Lord. You learn God. You draw near to God. You learn to enjoy God's presence when you give him that day. You train yourself in the ways of the Lord. Then you'll take delight in the Lord. And I will make you to ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. So the Sabbath was given not primarily just to recharge, but to sanctify. And all those Old Testament passages fit together when they're taken together. The words given to Moses. God wants to sanctify the people on his holy day. The word of the Lord through Isaiah. God wants them to learn to take delight in him. They'll find it's richer than turning to their own pleasures on his holy day. We should enjoy the Lord more than anything else we might fill the day with. That's what the prophet's saying. If I don't, then I need sanctifying. I need sanctifying. But there's a second dominant theme coming out of the Old Testament Sabbath. Now it's 19 after. Do you want to do 2 points tonight, or do you want to do just that one and do three next Sunday night? How many want to do one more tonight? You won't hurt my feelings. Put your hand up. How many would rather do three next Sunday night? I was actually thinking B, but okay, we'll do one more. I don't think this will take as long. It's shorter. There's a second dominant theme coming out of the Old Testament Sabbath that I think is even more important and relates to, it will launch us into the importance of the Lord's Day. Everything we've said so far, a day separate, one in seven, the establishment of weeks, first of all, to recognize and honor the true Creator rather than any false gods. Okay? That's the first principle. The rhythm of weeks, six and one. The principle of honoring the Lord's Day because it's a process not just of resting, but not doing other things so that full attention can be turned to God. So there's the rhythm of creation and there's a sanctifying that's meant to come. But once you've said both those things, you're not even close to the main thing that the Old Testament teaches about the Lord's Day. And here's where I think many people miss it. Point number two, another long title. After establishing the proportions of one day in seven to know our Creator God and become sanctified and transformed by Him, the central theme of the Old Testament, I'm not talking new now, the central theme of the Old Testament Sabbath is further sharpened. We're not done yet with what the Old Testament Sabbath is all about. The text, real quick, is Deuteronomy 5, 12 to 15. In Deuteronomy, you have Moses preaching about the Ten Commandments. The commandments have been given, and what you have really in Deuteronomy is Moses preaching to the people about the commands, reminding, explaining all the ramifications of the commandments. Deuteronomy 5:12. Observe the Sabbath day, you've heard this part, to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day to the Lord your God. Nothing new there. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. Okay, nothing new there, same principle. 15 is new. Why? Why this insistence? This repeated insistence. You don't do, get out of your old routine. You don't do that stuff on the Sabbath. Why? 15. What should we do? You shall remember. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. This is what they're supposed to do when they stop doing their regular work. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. And the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore means here's why. Here's why the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Why did God say, keep the Sabbath, rest, don't do your own work? Moses tells us. Here's the reason, in no uncertain terms. You need a full day in seven. An hour isn't enough. You need a full day in seven where you ponder God's delivering work. You need to go over this with your family. You need to go over this with your servants, all your employees, everyone under your authority. You need to make sure everybody gets the picture. Why are the livestock not working? I mean, you know, I don't mean to be crass, but you can't teach a donkey about, you know, worshiping God on the Sabbath. Why the livestock? Well, because there are servants that work with the livestock. God says, I want everyone to step back and say, hey, wait a minute, this is really different. And the purpose of it is, you used to remember, you were slaves. You were under a bondage that in a million years you couldn't get out of. Now you're starting to see, we're going to come in next week to the Lord's Day. You're starting to see a picture here of what we're supposed to get on the Lord's Day. You were a slave. You were in bondage. Your future was absolutely hopeless. And I, the Lord, with my strong arm, I reached down. Todd was talking about it in the baptistry. I reached down with a strong arm when you couldn't do a thing about it. I rescued you. And if you don't take one day in seven and remember the great deliverance that you've received, your heart will be unsanctified. We've already looked at the no work instructions, but why were they given? What do we do while we don't work? Were they to, you know, contemplate their belly buttons? Were they to count clouds? Were they to shop and spend their money? No. They were to cease from work so they could give undivided, undistracted attention to God's great delivering work on their behalf. That's the reason given for the break from just their regular routine. I don't know how to say it, and I don't know how to make it clear to so many people who need to take it more seriously. Learning and knowing God takes time. It takes blocks of time. If you want to know God intimately, you need to turn your foot from all other things that you would think are more important or even more pleasurable and learn to diet your soul around God and set your heart on Him. You can't do it properly in an hour. You can't do it properly in 2 hours. God sets aside a day, one day in every seven. Right from creation onward, we're forced with this lesson. I'm forced with this lesson that I'm not as spiritually inclined as I might like to think I am. That I'm not going to drift into this. That there's a price to be paid. And so after establishing the week's proportions, which shows the Creator, God states clearly the purpose. Israel ponders deeply her deliverance from Egypt. And she needed the Sabbath if she was going to remain thoughtful. She needed the Sabbath if she was going to remain holy. Above all, she needed the Sabbath if she was going to not grow cold-hearted toward her salvation, her deliverance. Without this turning of attention to her delivering God, Isaiah 58 is the proof, she would become exactly like the nations all around her. And I'm arguing, you'll see it more clearly next Sunday. It's not just an opinion that the Bible teaches this. I'm arguing that the church becomes careless, callous, and worldly when she forgets to honor the Lord's Day. You don't know right now. You don't know the number of family situations in this church. You don't know the situations where there are, in this church, married partners not being faithful to each other. You don't know the number of people who talk to me week by week who come here every single Sunday, sit there and take the communion cup and the cracker. I don't know how they do it. And they live with someone who's not their spouse, and they'll say, but we love each other. You don't know the number of Christians in this church who know more about the latest episode of Glee than they do their New Testament. You don't know the number of Christians in this church who sit here week by week and who fill their mind more with whatever music they can tap into more than they study their Bibles. My conviction is that at the root of a lot of that is people just aren't coming to church as often as they need to. You turn your foot from doing your own pleasure, and you'll find, if you'll give God a chance, make it a day of delight unto the Lord, that it may go well with you and generations to come. Everyone said?